Well, good morning. I'm with the American Psychological Association, and it was only in hearing this title again, you know how you're writing those titles when you're submitting, it's like, oh, did I write that title? What I will be describing is a program we have at APA where we're trying to increase and strengthen the involvement of psychologists in tobacco cessation efforts, especially with health priority populations. This is my disclosure. I have no relationships to disclose. And these are the things that I'm going to try to accomplish during this presentation. I'm going to talk a little bit about smoking cessation needs in health priority populations, to talk about the need for more involvement of psychologists, and describe two efforts that we have around one of our dissemination projects. It's focusing on the app development and a health equity ambassadors program that we have. I think we've heard it enough at this conference already about the relationship between smoking and health. And what this slide shows is the trend in current cigarette smoking from 1965, the year after the release of the Surgeon General's report, until 2010. And it also shows the goals, the most recent healthy people's goals for youth and for adults. And what it does show is that we've had kind of a steady decrease for the most part in adults, and then some decrease since about 1992 when we started adding the high school students high school students. And it brings us to a point in this use of tobacco where we're starting to see that we are going to have to sometimes take a more focused effort for certain groups of population to continue this decline. This is just showing you some of the numbers, and I won't go through those because I think most of us are familiar with the use of smoking cigarettes and then some other tobacco use, and the rate of past tobacco use among youth. And I wanted to talk a little bit about health disparity populations. Health disparity populations are groups such as racial ethnic minority populations and low-income populations that experience poor health as a result of long-term social justice inequities. But there are some other groups that, by their special needs, are labeled as health priority populations, and these are some that are listed by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. I will be talking about some health priority populations. They don't match with this exactly, but there is some overlap. So we have health disparity and some health priority populations that we'll be talking about later. There is, within the health priority populations, what we'll sometimes see is more smoking or more severe consequences of smoking. So, for instance, persons with a mental illness smoke more than people in the general population. And an example of that is people with schizophrenia, about 60% of them smoke. Down to people with phobias or fears, and a third of them smoke. So there's high smoking within this population, and often that is not addressed in their treatment. With racial ethnic populations, there is very wide difference in smoking rates, but in descending order, there's more smoking among American Indians, people who identify as multiple race, and then less smoking among Asians. But if you look within Asians, there are certain populations within Asian population that has very high smoking levels. Within sexual minority populations, LGBT individuals usually smoke more than other groups. There's more severe consequences for African Americans, for instance. Diseases from smoking kill more African Americans each year than car crashes, AIDS, murders, drug and alcohol abuse combined. And then about 71% of African American non-smokers are exposed to secondhand smoke. People living with HIV, and there's an error in this slide, HIV-positive smokers have higher mortality rates and report lower quality of life than HIV. Than HIV-positive non-smokers. I had a minus sign there. And that HIV-AIDS patients receiving prolonged antiretroviral treatment who smoke are at particular risk of developing heart disease. So we're looking at these kinds of health priority populations. and these are just a couple of examples. There are smoking interventions that exist, and they, for the most part, some have shown to be very effective, and I won't go through that. But one of the things that we need is better dissemination of what we know. And dissemination is key to implementation of evidence-based interventions, and there are people who have identified some problems with how we disseminate information or how we translate what we know and get it out into the field. So there's a great push for dissemination work and implementation science work. There are some effective dissemination strategies. We're not quite sure of what really works with all groups, particularly professional groups, and how to get them more involved in evidence-based practices. The traditional academic model of communicating findings through scientific journals and print media, some say is not effective and is waning in its reach. There are some people say there's the most effective information sources for clinicians, for example, working in substance abuse treatment, which is a health priority population for smoking, prefer interpersonal contact with coworkers and seminars and conferences, more face-to-face things. So what we've what seems to really work is using some kind of a blended learning process, using all of these things. I'm of a generation that really didn't do a lot of tech things, so we're finding that sometimes age and generational training background shapes where you get your information and how you trust your information source. So we have our program goal is that we have some health disparities initiative that we started, and one of our areas of focus is substance abuse and smoking within that. And then we also got some support from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, who developed a program to try to increase dissemination among professional associations and professional groups. And so our program goal is to better understand the barriers psychologists experience in addressing smoking and then to disseminate information to them. We found about four reasons that we think may be barriers for psychologists when talking with psychologists, also looking at some of the literature. And one is urgency and just not understanding the importance of addressing smoking. The other is competency. Do you have the skills or the resources that you need? One is sensitivity and purview. And I'm still struggling with this a little bit, but is it they didn't consider it appropriate to address within their practice? Or if somebody comes in and they're schizophrenic, do I really want to deal with smoking? Because the cigarette sometimes is calming. Same thing with substance abuse. I used to work with substance abuse populations, and it's almost like a reward to get that cigarette and you have these smoke breaks. So that kind of purview. I heard an interesting comment last week at another conference. It wasn't on smoking, but in terms of professionals seeing themselves as working to their optimal level of training, and that sometimes they don't consider certain things to be working at their optimal level of training. The person that was talking was an orthopedic surgeon. We were talking about immobility and arthritis and within African-American and Latino women. And so they found out that, of course, the factors that contributed to that is obesity and depression. And so he was saying, well, that's not what I'm trained to do. And my optimal level of training is, you know, to give you a replacement joint. And so if this is your problem, then it's not within my purview to really kind of do that. The other is just reimbursement, and I won't go through that, but just do I get paid for this and how do I recover costs for providing that kind of service. So what we did at APA as part of this is we had a conference on strengthening psychology's role in reducing tobacco health disparities in 2012 with about 80 invited participants. All are leaders at the government level research or in programs around tobacco use. We had 24 presentations. We got about 130 recommendations, and there's a site on our website where you can look at that. These are the six areas of recommendations that we got. The first was, and these are, like I said, leaders in the field, were awareness, education, and training. And those people who came to that were still surprised when they heard about work that other people were doing. In terms of a lot of people weren't aware, for instance, of the HIV link and smoking and some of the interactions with medications and smoking for their patients. The other thing that they recommended for us is that we need to collaborate more with people who really kind of do this work. And the third was materials, resources, publications, and presentations, just like getting that message out that this is something that you really need to attend to, because in attending to this, it may improve the effectiveness of your other work. And there is research that supports that. Those are the three that we're really focusing in on. There are other recommendations you can see there for research, advocacy, and funding. We did some short little interviews just to kind of explore what people thought, making sure that we heard what they thought they meant, and we also wanted to explore the idea of this app. I told you we were developing an app. We're funded to develop very small funding. We said it might be good or fun to do this app development. So I'm not going to go through everything that we asked people, just to make sure that we understood and know what to kind of put in the app and for some of our materials development. I'm going to highlight a couple of things, though. One is that, do you believe the psychologist should ask about smoking? And everybody said yes, and this happened at the conference. This happened with our key informants. And then what were you asked, under what circumstances? They said yes, but they didn't necessarily do it. And so they would only do it if they saw an indication that they needed to ask. If their client was pregnant, they might ask, are you smoking? Or if they smelled of smoke, they may ask, okay, is this something that I need to address? But we were saying that this is something that you probably should do just routinely. That's become kind of the standard. I'm going to skip over a couple of these. I want to get to this one because we're dealing with health priority populations. What do you think about evidence practices for health disparity populations? There is still a lot of skepticism about the validity or the appropriateness of what is labeled evidence-based practices for health disparity populations, particularly racial ethnic populations, so that while people still believe in it, they are to just say that it's listed in somebody's repository, they're not quite sure. So there is still this hesitancy around that, and that's one of our biggest issues. And for instance, one person that talked said that a very good clinician said that he hadn't seen one yet that he really trusted. Okay. We are developing the app, and these are the reasons we're developing the app, to provide some portable information, really to try to get at that materials point and the urgency and some skills to just disseminate this information. We know that there are some tobacco cessation apps that are available, but most are for consumers. They are not usually for professionals. Our app is called Smoke Screen. It's still in development, and there are three main sections of it. One is kind of a purpose. We try to tell people this is why you need to do and address smoking. The second part is health priority profiles. It's just getting the information out to them. We give them the prevalence, health consequences, risk factors, the clinical significance of why they should do that. We list all the practices that have been kind of confirmed as evidence-based practices. And then we also are giving them a clinical toolbox. And one is a practice profile tool, which they're able to track their own practice for their own self-monitoring. And then we give kind of the standard information that they would get. These are the health priority population profiles that we have. These have been development. They are being reviewed. We are getting some people who attended meetings and other people who volunteered to review for all of these 15 population profiles that we have. And they will also review and test the app for us, and that is being done. We hope to have that developed by January, all the reviews back, and this will be a free app that's available. We will extract some of that information and make it available in other forms on the web and also for information that people could use. We have a health equity ambassadors. We are partnering, we're partnering with the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center at UCSF. They're helping us with some outreach, with some webinars, but they also have given us a small subcontract, and we're doing Health Equity Ambassadors Program. And this is to increase the urgency among psychologists. We want to increase address urgency and some competency. And with that, they are volunteers, mostly APA members. We've used volunteers before. And we give small awards for ambassador-initiated dissemination activities within their own networks because we found that a lot of people were more moved by their colleagues. And so if we can help support them doing things within their own networks, and we are not limiting, this can be students, it can be teachers, it can be people going to conferences. And so some of the activities that we help to support are some social media, campus events, and staff development. And there is a core curriculum they have to finish with us, which is essentially like three webinars. One is on health equity. Brian Smedley is doing that one, has done that one for us. The other is going to be on health priority populations, and the other is on dissemination. And that's going to start in 2015. So these are my closing observations. There is a great need to address the urgency to overcome. There's more pressing matters to attend to within psychologists and to see that this is something within their professional purview that really has consequence for the person they're treating. So for the severely mentally ill, while you're treating that, they are dying. The second reason left for dying is actually from tobacco. And so we wanted to address that. We have to address the skepticism regarding validity of evidence-based practices. Within tobacco, there is really clearer evidence that it really does work with many populations, but there still is that kind of reluctance, especially for racial ethnic populations. And the other observation is that there are multiple dissemination approaches needed. And so to fit people of my generation, people of a younger generation, we are really, I don't think we're at the point where we can say one is superior for everybody all the time. So we are believing that that blended approach, and that's what we've been doing. So we've been using Twitter, web, conference presentations, and we're trying to expand that. I just wanted to acknowledge our funding sources, staff, and our two co-PIs, Faye Belgrave at Virginia Commonwealth and Martin Aguchi at Georgetown. So if you have any questions, interested in students who or people who might want to be a health equity ambassador to do a little small campus project or whatever, please contact us. When we were funded, we actually have, we said we wanted 50. We already had 86. but we thought it would be better to recruit to get the message out and to get to a broader audience and to also give us the opportunity to perhaps get into some places that are not represented within the 86 that we have. So we will, so if you're interested, you can send it to us. But since most of this was for psychologists, we have been using, for the most part, our networks and our listservs and our way of recruiting. So when we go out like this, we're happy to not be so to limit it only to psychologists.